According to the Long Beach Point in Time Count, the unhoused population in Long Beach has increased by 62% since 2020, which explains why homelessness is the number one issue for voters. But what does the number one issue mean? Does that mean as a society we want to come together to help those who are less fortunate? Or does it simply mean we don't want to see tent cities and people living at their lowest point in our communities? My colleague, Laura Anya Morga, recently wrote a story regarding a petition residents in downtown Long Beach have created that wants the nonprofit organization called Christian Outreach in Action, which provides hot meals to thousands of unhoused people, moved out of their community and closer to the multi-service center on the west side. The man behind the petition said, quote, "We want our streets back." That comment took me to a man Laura and I met while reporting on the homeless count. I asked him, if you could tell people one thing about people in your situation, what would it be? He said, trade places with me. Treat people like you want to be treated and give them a chance. None of us want to be overlooked. But let's say the nonprofit did move to the west side. What services would our unhoused population receive if they were able to make the 3-mile hike to the multi-service center, which is the city's intake for our unhoused population and offers various forms of assistance? These are some of the questions we are going to address as the Long Beach Post takes a deeper dive into some of the issues increasing our homeless population, as well as programs that are working. Ronnie Maynard is an example of both what is working and what should have worked much sooner. He was homeless, addicted to drugs, and living on the riverbed when Duke Givens from the nonprofit Care Closet found him. It wasn't a quick fix. But thanks to the persistence of Duke and Care Closet, Ronnie Maynard is on the road to becoming a success story and proving that programs and assistance can work. We will hear from Ronnie and learn his success story on this week's The Word. We've had some amazing shows on our second season of The Word podcast. We've also delivered news that is important for your life and communities in the Long Beach Post, the Business Journal, and the Hi-Lo. While this content is always free, it's not free to create. So please take a moment and click the red Become a Member button at lbpost.com. For as little as $8.99 per month, you will receive discounts on Post merchandise, exclusive members-only newsletters, and exclusive previews on special editorial projects. Everything we do is for you, but we can't do it without you.
Watch this. This.
You are now listening to The Word with Jackie Ray.
What did you do after you graduated high school?
I didn't graduate from high school.
You didn't? Okay.
Something that I planned to go back to. I got caught up in a lot of stuff after high school and or during high school, and I chose to go the opposite direction with my life, and it didn't turn out too well.
So did you, was it like gang activity or just?
Yeah, it was a little bit of both, drugs, you know. And I was doing pretty good for a long time, and I just couldn't find myself. I kept getting caught up in things. I always got good jobs, and there was something going on with me, and I didn't know. And later on in life, I found out that I had depression. And I would find I was using drugs to deal with the depression because I didn't know what it was. And whenever I would feel that way, it would take me really down, and I'd use drugs to pick myself back up again. But it was misdiagnosed for years.
But how old were you when you found out that you, how old were you when you were diagnosed with depression?
It's been 6 years.
Oh, wow. It was late.
Yeah, like, so it was really late. They kept saying I have behavioral problems and all this kind of stuff, but nobody ever keyed in on it. And finally it was that I had that problem. And I wondered for years what was wrong with me. I just didn't know that I was different than everybody else, and I just couldn't figure it out.
That has to feel frustrating when you know something is wrong, but everyone is just labeling you a problem instead of really.
Exactly. And I went through that for years. For years. And when I finally found out and I was put on medication, my life has been good ever since. I try not to dwell on the past. I had COVID a couple of years ago, so there's a lot of my past that I don't remember. But it's been good since I've been working with Duke. He's been like an example to me. You know, me being the age that I am, I should be an example to him. But he's my mentor, And ever since I've been with him, my life has been the life I wish I always had.
So you were diagnosed with depression 6 years ago.
Yeah.
And then how long ago did you start working with Duke and Care Closet?
I've been working with Care Closet now going on 3 years. And when he found me, I was living on a riverbed.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, that's where I thought I would, that was my life. I was mm-hmm. going to be there forever. And he came by and offered work to the volunteer with them. And I found out that I liked volunteering working with him. We started out with about 13 or 14 people, and we went all the way down to three people because most of us were from the riverbed, and getting up doing daily jobs and stuff like that was really hard to do.
Mm.
You know, because you have to wake up, you have to survive. And that was interfering with the survival, you know, thing. So I stayed with it though, and I'm here now, you know, I'm still here. And it's been rough. It's been rough, but homelessness is a whole new experience.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something I wouldn't wish on anybody.
How long were you homeless?
Since 2016.
And then what were the circumstances that led to that?
I'd say my depression had a lot to do with it. I always felt like I never fit in a lot of places.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went down there, you know, nobody had a care in the world down there. So I felt like, this is where I need to be. No responsibilities. I knew my family wasn't going to come down there looking for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I just got lost, you know, in the world of the riverbed. And, you know,
so were you working in 2016 and just said, you know, this is too much? Like, how did all that happen?
The last time I worked was in 2010.
Okay.
I was working in an oil refinery, and I've had several really good jobs in my life. And because of my depression, like I said, I didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
And there were days I felt really, really good. And then other days I wouldn't feel too good, and I wouldn't go to work, and, you know, and then I'd just lose the job. When I was there, I always applied myself, just like when I was in school. I got good grades, but it was something wrong, and I just didn't know
mm-hmm. for
years.
So when you went down to the riverbed, were you just kind of walking around and saw people down there, or how did you find that location?
That's how it happened. I was walking by one day, and I seen a friend of mine from up on a bridge. I looked down, and I seen him down there, and I went down there and was talking to him, and he told me that that was where he had lived, and I hadn't seen him in years. And I went down there and left and came back again and left. And then one day I just decided, you know, this is where I'm going to stay down here. And I asked him if he had a tent. He got me a tent, and my life on the riverbed began.
Mm.
It's not always, you know, nice down there. You have to be set up where you're going to get your food from. You know, you get all the showers and, you know, things that are available to you now that you're homeless. You got to find ways to survive down here.
Mm-hmm.
And there are things that happen down there that it's like a whole nother world.
Mm-hmm.
And if you live it, then you really can't, you know, comment about it. Everybody down there is not bad, but they're in survival mode, you know, and they'll do whatever they have to do to survive. You know, and then when your help does come, there's always conditions on which they're willing to help you.
Mm.
You know? And I think they just, you need to build up trust with a lot of the people that are down there because they have none. They've run out of hope, you know, and you need to build up trust. And that's what Duke does. We go down there and we give them clothing and offer them showers and food and stuff like that. And because I know them, and I've been there before, they trust me probably more than they would anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
So, I go down there, and we go down there daily. And Duke gets a lot of volunteers down there. They don't stick with it like I have, but they're willing, you know. And he builds up a trust with them. And once that trust begins, then they start to show up more and more and more. And they start to realize what they're doing down there is they're doing it for themselves, cleaning up and and he all likes the showers and all that. He offers them hygiene and stuff, and a lot of them are coming around. Some of them work with us right now, and they're really being good. You know, they're really hanging in there. So
now, when you say there's stuff that happens down there that when you live it, you don't talk about it.
Right. There are some things down there that happen that I don't want to talk about. I've seen people get hurt. it's unbelievable. You know, you see somebody do something like that to somebody, beat them up really bad, and it's because down there the rules are different. They're not like up on the street, you know, where we have laws and rules up here. But when you go down there, things change, and you have to live by what goes on down there. It's like they don't tolerate any thieving or, you know, taking from one another. But you have to get into an encampment where there's everybody's together, and mm-hmm. that's what you have down there. Then you have the loners, people go up alone by themselves. But the safest way when you're down there is to be in a group of people, and that way you're pretty well protected.
So you said you had to build up trust. Like, I think a lot of times from the outside looking in, people will say, okay, let me just go down there and just help one person just get off the street, get a job. Mm-hmm. But like you said, it's probably not that easy, right?
It's not. A lot of people down here have given up. You mm-hmm. know, it's like they offer these programs and stuff that are, you know, willing to help you, but there's always a condition to what they're willing to help you with. And sometimes those conditions are a bit harsh for some people. Mm-hmm. And if you've been down there long enough, it just becomes a way of living and you don't want to do anything else. Mm-hmm. You've lost hope. You've lost, you know, mm-hmm. you don't want to just do anything because mm-hmm. everything comes so easy to you down there.
So when you say, it seems like that would be a difficult life to become accustomed to.
Not if you're desperate.
Okay.
If you're desperate and you get down there and you want to survive, you do the things that you have to do to survive. Mm-hmm. It's just like you would right up in the regular world. If you don't do what you have to do, then you're not going to survive. You have to get a job. You got to go to work. You got to pay bills. And down there, you don't have to do all that. You know? Mm-hmm. So you just get comfortable with it. And I'm thinking, well, I'm okay. Nobody's bothering me. The police aren't coming down here bothering us. I got a place to eat. I got a place, you know, you just get comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It's a step down, but you're still living.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of people down there who have mental problems, and they don't get the help that they need. There's so many mental people down there. Mm-hmm. Walk around filthy, nasty, dirty all day. And those are the ones that I gravitate towards. I like to help them out a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And when they see you, they wave and they smile at you, you know, and you get... When I leave from down there and I know they're safe or they've had something to eat or whatever it's like that, then it makes me feel okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's why I keep striving so hard. We do. The help that we help people, a lot of people we help.
Mm-hmm.
And when they see us coming, they smile or they, you know, and do give them, you know, food or whatever it is that we might have to give them. And they bag up trash mm-hmm. and stuff like that so we can take it to the dump and keep their own areas clean. And I guess once you start to get them some kind of repetitious program mm-hmm. of cleaning up behind themselves and doing stuff like that, they start to do it automatically. It's like you have to retrain them to do things like that because they haven't had to do it. God, I couldn't believe, I look back on it now and it hasn't been that long. I was down there.
Mm-hmm.
It took me to get in trouble to be removed from down there. And when I was in this other place where I was at, after 5 months, I really had a chance to reflect on what was going on in my life
mm-hmm.
and if I wanted to continue on living that life or did I want to change. And I was working with Duke a year before all this happened. And I had already started to move on from the life that I was living down there. And when I went in and I came out, he told me, he picked me right back up again. And that right there was enough for me.
Now, so let's go back a little bit. So what was your typical day like before you met Duke?
Well, because I was on drugs, I'd be up all night. And most of the time I'd just be working on, I'd get up in the morning and work on my bicycle because make sure it was running right. Mm-hmm. And then I'd go to the church and get something to eat. And then... just pretty much all day long, just go around trying to hustle up on what I could. You know, there's things that you want when you're down there. It's all about the hustle all day long
mm-hmm.
to survive.
Mm-hmm.
And then, that was before Duke came along. That's what I would do. I was a bicycle repair person.
Mm-hmm.
People would bring me their bikes and I would fix them. And any other odd jobs that I could do when I went to the street. I had people, like there was a mobile home park over here, and I would go there and clean the street and stuff like that for them, and they would pay me.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So it was like I had a job, but not really a job, and mm-hmm. I would do that daily. And that was my day consisted of, was getting up, going, working, doing whatever I could to get what I needed for that day, and then I just go on back to the riverbed. Your days are what you made them.
Right.
Yeah. You're not having too many responsibilities, so you just do what you have to do to survive through that day.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a never-ending story. And you become accustomed to it, and it's real easy to get comfortable with.
What was a typical day like after you met Duke?
I couldn't wait for him to come so I could go to work.
Really?
Yeah. I'm never late, and that even when I was working a regular job, that was one of my things. I always get to work early. We never had no problems with me not showing up.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I missed a day since I've been with him.
That's good.
And I don't know, he saw something in me or something. But I've always been a follower.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a pastor of a church wife tell me one time, she said, you're a leader, you're not a follower. And I remember her telling me that. And I've been doing it ever since. I surprised myself. My family and everything is very proud of me. My daughter, people who just didn't think I would ever get it, you know, now they're in my life again.
That's kind of feel great.
Yeah, it feels so good to get a text saying, good morning, Dad, or my nieces, hey, Uncle, how you doing? You know, and people are really concerned about me.
Mm-hmm.
And they have always been, but I chose to go and I would always say, well, I'm not hurting anybody, but yes, I was always hurting anybody mm-hmm. that loved me.
I think that's another thing we always think about when we see our, you know, the unhoused community, the first thing we think is, where is their family?
Right.
But in your case, your family wanted to help. They just couldn't.
Yeah. And they didn't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know what to do. I tried recovery before and it just wasn't for me. And then I, like I said, I got into going to church and stuff like that. And I found through our Lord, I found a way, and mm-hmm. I would call on him. And in times of trouble or whatever it was like, I would just seem to get through it, you know. And this last time when I got in trouble, I was tired.
Mm-hmm.
I was done. Like I said, I had memory problems because of COVID, and I didn't want what I had anymore. I was tired.
And then Duke said you got into a little bit of trouble.
Oh yeah,
like 5 months ago or so.
Yeah, 5 months
ago. Do you want to talk about that at all?
Leaving the riverbed, going to a friend's house. And it was like, I guess, 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning, and I had some drugs on me.
Mm-hmm.
And on my way right down the street, a police officer pulled me over and got to asking me my name. And I kept giving him my brother's name, and he kept saying, no, that's not it. No, mm-hmm. that's not it. And finally, I told him my real name because I was on the run
mm-hmm.
from the situation. And they took me in, and I had been out there so many times in my life, so it was like it saved my life,
mm-hmm.
that situation, because I didn't know what I was doing, I didn't know what I wanted to do, and I hadn't been on my medication for my depression,
mm-hmm.
and so I would use the drug to take me out of that depressive state, because my mother would always sit next to me, and I would be sitting on the couch, and she'd say, what is wrong with you? Smile, do something, and I'd just be in this, you know, and I didn't, like I said, I didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
But since I've been with Duke, and I'm taking my medication like I'm supposed to, everything has been okay.
So when you went to jail for a little right. bit, and then that is what helped you get back on your medication?
Yeah, they helped okay. me get back on my medication, and while I was in there, I kept taking it, and I wasn't having the you would think in a place like that you would be depressed, but I wasn't having those depressed moments
mm.
after I started taking the medication, and I haven't had any since. I'm taking Remeron for my depression, and it works.
So you were only in there for 5 months. Is that how long you were supposed to be in there? Did they let you out early? No.
Okay.
Okay. What happened was I was supposed to, they were trying to give me 2 years. At that time, and like I said, I didn't know what was going to happen. I didn't really care. I kept going back and forth to court. COVID kept me from going sooner. Every time somebody would catch COVID, they would back you up 30 more days, 30 more days. And it went all the way to 5 months. And I had got a lawyer down there, and I told him what I was doing while I was on the run. And he said, I don't know how, I don't know if he checked to see a care closet or what happened, but all of a sudden everything changed.
And when he found out you worked for Care Closet?
I guess Care Closet. And he came back to me and he says, well, you know what? He says, I think what it is, I think you have a drug problem and you need a program. Okay, I'll try it. And it took me 5 months to get to the program, though. That's what because of the COVID kept coming in. And every time somebody caught it, it would be 30 more days, 30 more days. And I think, like I said, that probably changed my mind. When I got out, they put me in a program. Program's not that bad. It's not as bad as I thought it would be. It's a really nice program. And I've been there ever since. And going backwards is not, I don't want to go backwards. I want to go forward.
Yeah.
And I'm doing it. I've been an example to the people where I live at, the guys, the other guys that are in this program, and they're always coming to me, asking me questions, and it makes me feel good that I can pass on how I feel or what I'm going through or whatever is like that, and I tell them how I got to where I am, how long I've been on the riverbed, and what I really get upset sometimes because people put down people that are down there.
Right.
And like I said, you can't put them down because you don't know what's going on down there. You have no understanding of what it is. And I get real offensive when you talk about people that are down there. They're just people that are lost and they need help.
Right.
And it doesn't seem like the help is going to come for them. You hear about all this money that they're given for homelessness, and but you don't see it. But that's a political issue that I
that's a story for another day, right?
Where is the money? You know, there are people that, like I said, they need help bad. Medically, mentally, and a lot of them physically, they need help. And as long as, well, you know, they said that homelessness is the reason why a whole lot of people have jobs. Because the money that is supposed to be directed toward helping the homeless is going toward paying these people these salaries that they're not doing what they should be doing.
So now you're in this program right now. And then what comes after the program? Housing, a job? What comes after the program?
Well, the program that I'm in, they're offering me a manager spot.
That's fantastic.
They're offering me a spot as to be a manager of the program that I'm in. And that means free rent, and I can continue on doing what I'm doing. And that's a blessing in itself, you know. Knowing that I ever think anybody want me to be a manager of anything, you know, ever. And I'm in a spot where it may happen.
That's great. So you'll get the free rent. You'll get a salary as well?
I'm on Social Security.
Okay.
And I'm Social Security retirement.
Okay.
So it's not, you know, where if I had waited till I got 65 and got it, it would have been a lot more. But I'm being told that I can go and have that
increase.
If that's the case, then I can save some money and eventually get my own place, a car, or whatever it is like that. So I'm saving what little money I can right now. But this is all new to me, doing the right thing.
Now, how old are you now, if I can
ask? I'm 65.
Okay. So is there a dream job you would want, a dream job you would want at 65? Or are you ready to just help people and just live the life, the best life you can?
That's where I'm at right now. I would like to continue helping people and just live the best life I can from here.
You don't look 65.
I love people. I've taken care of myself. It's amazing that I have taken care of myself. I don't have any high blood pressure, no other issues but my depression.
That's fantastic. Thank
God for that, because I have been in situations that I'm glad to be sitting where I'm sitting right now.
It's crazy to think of anyone finally finding themselves at 65, but it is proof that it's never too late. It's even crazier to think that one person's compassion and commitment to helping others can make all the difference. I know it's frustrating to see homeless people day in and day out, but imagine if Ronnie Maynard had been diagnosed with depression and placed on medication as a child. Maybe there would have been one less homeless person on our streets. But we can certainly say without Duke Givens and Care Closet, there would be at least one more right now. So maybe that's the lesson. We can come together and create petitions to move the problem out of our line of sight, or we can come together and create real solutions. If you choose the latter and want to volunteer, make sure you check out the Care Closet on Instagram at CareClosetLBC, or you can visit them online at CareClosetLB.org. Thank you so much to Ronnie for not only sitting down and speaking with me, but also letting me spend the day with him as he completed his volunteer work for Care Closet. That video is coming later this week, so make sure you are subscribed to our YouTube channel and become a member of the Long Beach Post as well, and join us as we take a deeper dive into where we are and where we are going with our homeless population. And remember, if you have to speak a word, make it a good one.